Welcome to the Debo Unfiltered podcast. We are your hosts, Awa Mary, Dr. Nefi, and Anafai Badnar.
We are here to engage, educate, and hopefully empower you.
Today's episode is going to be a discussion about the myth of going home. So for a lot of us Africans who have migrated to the Western countries, whether you're in Europe, you're in the US, you're in Asia, a lot of us have this idea that we're going to go home. But is that a reality? From the generations before us, what we find is a lot of the Gambians, especially who were in Washington, D.C., Silver Spring, Maryland, Atlanta, they've been here for 40, 50 years. And they're like, we're going to go home. But then it never really happens. You find a lot of them are dying here. And what's going home is the dead bodies. And thus, if you can even gather up enough coins to send the dead bodies back home. So when we think of the myth of going home, Awa Mary, what comes to mind for you? Because for me, the first thing that comes to mind is the folks at home don't even want you back.
Damn. That's a good way to open it. So most recently, my family and I, we decided to move back, and we're not fully 2 feet, in the Gambia. So we go back and forth. However, yes, there's a little bit of truth to that, of they don't even want you there, right? But also, there's also that feeling of, if not us, who? Then who, right? So it's a very controversial topic for me, the myth of going home, because there's like pros and cons to the conversation today. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I think there's that myth, right, where like you think you're going to go home because you've been away for so long and the door is going to open up and everybody's going to want you back home and you're just going to have this wonderful time because you left it in the 80s and you're going to come back and it's just like that, that community. That is the biggest myth you can ever find, because the Gambia, for example, if we're talking about Gambian context, and I'm sure other African countries or even wherever you're from, life has changed, life has evolved. And so the context of how things were, it's completely, totally different. The neighborhood, let's just take the neighborhood that you thought like, I can't wait, I'm going to see this friend and that mm-hmm. friend and so on. You're not going to see those friends, that neighborhood, nobody's there. Mm-hmm. Majority is left. Life as you knew it before does not exist anymore. So I feel like, at least for me and my experience, I left, mid-90s and went to the U.S. And I was there for a while and then decided to go back. I think I visited like the first year, and then after I didn't go back until like, I think 2010 or 2011 or something like that. So it was like maybe 15 years later, or maybe 16 years later, when I went to visit, the first time visiting. And that's exactly how I felt at that time, was like, wow, like, you thought that you're going to see these friends, they don't have your time. You don't have their time. You don't have nothing in common. Your high school mates, you're not, and I don't want to say it in any kind of way where it's degrading. It's just, you're not on the same level. You not have the same mentality. You've lived away for a very long time. The way you think and process things are a little bit different. But you go with that excitement, like, I'm going to see this person and we're going to hang out. No, you're not 16 anymore. Mm-hmm. Right? So you're going back as like in your 30s. And then now fully, I'm in my 40s. So life's different. And then depending on what you about to go in to do, let's say you're working on a project or you're going to go open businesses and so on, you find so much challenges because your mindset has been, for lack of better words, westernized, or maybe you've lived in a different community or continent where they do things a little bit different. So now you go in when things are slow, paperwork is like forever. You have to sit in and knock doors and do things that you know are not ethical, just to kind of, make sure that your paperwork is processed. So yes, there's a lot of baggage that comes through that. So maybe I'll stop here and then we'll talk a little bit more. I'll pass down the mic to Dr. Nafi.
Thanks, Awa. While you were saying that, I actually was just thinking behind and, you know, just kind of, you know, just going down memory lane as to why. And then I guess the biggest question that I ask myself or would ask anybody, Gambian, whoever's an, anybody who's been an immigrant, you know, wanting to go back home, like, why do people want to go back home after spending so many years abroad? And I think you've touched on it on what you've said. I think the majority of us tend to romanticize about our childhood memories, mm-hmm. about, you know, how things were back in the day, and you want to go back to that. And I think the reason why people do say, oh, I'm going to go back. Some of the things or expectations why we want to go is maybe for better life. Some people are thinking, I can make my dollar go a little bit further if I go back mm-hmm. home. You know, there's more social support back home, as opposed to if you're in the Western world, you're living alone, nobody checks on you, there's not that extended family support. So most people want to go back longing for that, you know, external support as well. And just, I would say, like, cultural familiarity, right? You know, you know what the culture is like, you can dress a certain way, you can act a certain way, you don't have to explain yourself to your Western neighbor why you're doing X, Y, and Z. So just the cultural familiarity sometimes is why you're tired of living in a quote unquote foreign world or foreign mm-hmm. language, you know, land. So you want to go back to what you know and what you're comfortable with. And with the younger generation, I would say, like, people our age or younger, you know, they go back home with interest to maybe invest in new ventures, new businesses and stuff like that, right? Because they have a better opportunity and a smaller market, less competition than where they are. And so they find, you know, higher opportunities to go back and do that. So I would say these are some of the reasons why some of us want to go back home. But with that expectation of wanting to go back home, you know, I would say that there's probably a lot of mental preparation that need to happen. Mm-hmm. Because mm-hmm. if you're living in a different world for, let's say, 20, 30, 40, some people 50 years, they've been mm-hmm. out of, you know, their original countries. So going back home, you have to mentally be ready, because you experience almost like a reverse culture shock, right? Mm-hmm. Where mm-hmm. you feel like you no longer fit in your own culture. And that's happened to me when yeah. I go to Gambia, in a sense, and I'm sure a lot of people can relate to this, where you feel like some of the things, oh my gosh, like when they say, you know, something starts at 6 p.m., you show up at 6 p.m., right? And nobody's there till 10 o'clock at night. So you're yep. like, what the hell? Like, so you almost don't fit in that culture anymore, because you think differently, you act differently, and just, you know, throwing all this money when you go to weddings, this and that. Like, some of those are not what you're into anymore. So you almost don't fit into the culture that you left and now have come back to, because you have kind of mentally, emotionally grown away from some of those practices, right? So you have to get yourself ready to coming back to this place, and almost you have to reintroduce yourself and unlearn, in a way, some of the things you've learned in order to survive abroad. You have to unlearn some of those things to kind of fit back in society. Back home. And so, like Anna was saying, and we were laughing about this, that, you know, sometimes your family members don't want you to come back, right? Because mm-hmm. they would prefer you stay abroad and send money to them. But this is an interesting video that I actually came across like a month ago. It was this Senegalese lady doing a little TikTok video, and on there she was being very honest about her feelings about going back home. She looks a little bit older, so maybe she's in her 60s. And she was saying that she's lived in either France or Sweden for so long, like 30 years, 40 years. And she was just, you know, working to make ends meet. And so she was spending years supporting her family back home. And she never built a home, right? And so now that she wants to go back, she's realizing this grim picture that where would I go stay? I didn't own a home. I didn't buy a home. Mm-hmm. You know, I sent money to my family, but never have any tangible thing for myself there. And so she was kind of venting her frustration about how the same family that she's been supporting for years are talking bad about her, saying things like, you spent years abroad and you can't even, you haven't invested in yourself. You can't, you don't even have a home to come back to. You know, things like that. When you've been spending, you know, years and years and years spending all your money, you know, sending it back home. So, and she's not alone in that. There's so many people in similar situations who've lived here and now are thinking about going back home, but they don't have anything to go back to, right? And so, and in that video, she was mentioning, you know, at my age, she said, I'm sick and tired of wearing jeans. I'm sick and tired of having to wear these big coats and it's cold here. So I am looking to go back to a nice warm weather, you know, wear my little outfits that I'm used to, takasuma musori, but I can't, you know what I mean? That's what I want to go back to. And I can't do that because I have nowhere to go. So that touched me a little bit because there's a lot of people in that, you know, position that she's in. But I'll pass it to Anna to give us some of her views on it.
Yeah, I think that the idea of going home is so enticing for so many of us because when you think about the continent, it is growing. Like Africa has a growing economy. There's plenty and plenty of entrepreneurial potential and opportunities in terms of creating jobs yourself, not to go there looking for jobs, but creating jobs.
Right.
Also, the labor market is cheap. So that's a plus. If you go there and you're prepared, and you make sure that you have some place to live and you make sure you have your own way of making an income and you make sure that, you know, you can put your children in the best schools, things like that. I feel like it can work, but a lot of us, what we face is that you fantasize about going home. Let's take two countries, for example. Let's take Gambia and Rwanda. Both in 1994 went through huge changes. Rwanda went through the genocide and then Gambia went through Yahya Jammeh, right? When he came in. So we had a dictator, they had a dictator. The difference is Rwanda, they've built the country and it's beautiful and you can see the infrastructure. It literally looks like a second world country. It doesn't look like a third world country. I know a lot of people hate the ratings, but just so we're clear, like have an understanding what we're talking about. Then you go to Gambia, for example, where we've gone from third world to fourth world. We have just regressed badly, right? The country is just, the potholes you left there have gotten bigger. You know, the rundown buildings are even more rundown. Yes, there's new buildings coming up. Adama Barrow is building roads now, but the country is so poor and it seems like it's just not moving at the pace that other African countries are growing in. But then what Rwanda, as it looks like a beautiful growing economy and a developing country, when you go there because of the dictatorship, if you're not aligned with the president, you can't really build anything. So you quickly realize that, oh, he owns this joint, right? So thousands and thousands of Rwandese people cannot go back home to contribute to what looks like a growing economy because they're not aligned with President Kagame. Then for Gambia, what you have is we go back home with all these ideas that we have. We want to build. It's our home. If we don't build it, who will? Then you get there and you realize everybody's fighting you. We don't have basic infrastructure that's applicable to the lifestyle that we are now accustomed to. So you have children. When you have children, two of the major things you're looking at is good healthcare system and good school. We don't have that in Gambia. Our school system is trash. Our healthcare system is trash. I remember one time we had a discussion where Nafi, you shared mm-hmm. when both of your parents went to Gambia on vacation mm-hmm. and while on vacation, both your parents died.
Mm-hmm.
And you were stressing the importance that it's not just moving back home. It's even just going for vacation. You better pray that you don't get sick. Right. You better pray that nothing happened to you in the 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 1 month mm-hmm. that you're home mm-hmm. because either you find a way to get yourself to Senegal or you jump on the next plane to come back to the US.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, we want to fantasize the idea of going home and building. And then we look at people, for example, like Ismaila Baji. Mm-hmm. Ismaila Baji went back home, set up mm-hmm. this entire, you know, pharmaceutical system, mm-hmm. a new healthcare system where everything is online. It's super mm-hmm. 2024, you know, he mm-hmm. has a system that we can all see it works. Mm-hmm. And then you see everybody else fighting against him. Mm-hmm. And it feels like the diaspora, when we're ready to go home,
mm-hmm.
the homegrown local Gambians who never left don't welcome us. They mm-hmm. fight us. They have negative attitudes and thoughts towards us. So then so many of us, like myself, go.
Mm-hmm.
We have a small stint. 6 months, 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, you leave. I have a friend who stayed there for 10 years. And I was like, man, you've settled. Like,
mm-hmm.
you're good. No, no, no. After 10 years, this woman packed herself, her husband, or her children. And they're now back mm-hmm. in the U.S.
Oh, wow.
So, wow.
Oh, yeah, yes. After 10 years. She had a business. Her husband had a business. They even, you know, franchised the business. They opened some satellite offices in Senegal, but it was like, they just felt like it was endless. The fighting, mm. it never stopped. And it was like, at some point, you look at your life and yourself and you're yeah. like, I want to have a smooth, easy life. It's not even mm. worth it.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So I also want us to talk about some of the social concerns for women when the husbands say, I want us to move back home.
Lolo mom, mom garauna. First of all,
you're right.
I completely agree with both of y'all and your sentiments, right? Because, you know, I've been going back and forth. I see, I hear, I've witnessed
mm-hmm.
So much. First, you know, like you talk about the hate. It's not everybody, but it's there. The hate is there. From the locals not opening. You know, remember the Gambia, especially if we're talking about Gambia in the context. It's the smallest country inland, right? And so they feel like we come in to fight their little Dalasi, right? So we all act in competition fighting for that same. Mm-hmm. And so you see, you hear comments where they'll make this certain remarks and you're just wondering, like, that's not what we're here for. Like, we're here to do the work, you know? But again, everybody's like fighting for that same Dalasi, right? So it's small. And most people, like I said, if you want to really make it or that coming back home, do not think the Gambia alone. Think regionally. Think Africa yes. as a whole. You can't just come in and say, oh, especially for a for-profit business,
mm-hmm.
you can't be like, oh, I'm going to come and just set up shop in the Gambia alone. You might as well just start checking yourself into another mental institution at that point because... Yeah. The amount of stress that you're going to go through just to feel like, oh, I'm all dependent on one source of income only coming from the Gambia.
Mm-hmm.
It's not worth it. Mm-hmm. It's not mm-hmm. worth it. You got to have multiple sources of income, right? Mm-hmm. So I'll give you an example. For example, with my husband, like with this tech company, it's headquartered in the US. We have office in Spain. We have office in India. The Gambia, we also have an office there. So we're not solely dependent on, you know, just the services that we're providing in the Gambia. Or mm-hmm. if they feel like they're fighting you, you're like, okay, I have other customers somewhere else. I can survive. I'll figure it out to a point where, you know, even if we wanted to do regionally, we can still outsource and we have clients in other parts of Africa. So if you cannot just depend on that. The Woman Boss, for example, with me, is a nonprofit organization. It's not only in the Gambian known, but also even if I was, this is a nonprofit organization, is a whole complete different way of looking at things. You got to have your bread and butter, and your bread and butter cannot solely come from the Gambia. If you're moving back home, make sure you have mm-hmm. bread and butter coming from another source of income going in, don't just go and solely depend and rely on that, because that's where the frustration comes in. Number one, let's say you're trying to set up a business like you would in the US, for example. You can do, you know, I mean, you can even register your business online. You don't even have to go to offices. In the Gambia, you can't do that. You got to go knock on offices. The frustration, because you know, as an office, what the expectation is if you live abroad, right? If you go into the US, for example, you're going to, say, the Chamber of Commerce, you are greeted, you are followed through, you've given this and you provided this information and so on and so forth. If you wanted to go in the office, if not, you have all the information online. Well, we know the online is still, let's just follow with the third world country. So let's follow the procedures. You go into the offices. The person that you're going to go see probably is not even there. It's 10 o'clock in the morning. Once they get into the office, they have to make breakfast that they're eating, right? They're all over chit-chatting. Then they're going to come into the office. While you're waiting, their assistant is coming in with the attitude like, you know, you're there to bother them. Like, what's up? What you want? While you're sitting and waiting, they're on their TikToks. They're TikToking, watching TikToks, or they're watching theater or whatever. Not even with headphones, whatever. You know, I mean, it's just, so you, that shock, it's a culture shock. Literally, you're sitting there. It's a culture shock for me. And I've been back now 5 years and it's still, I stare and I'm like, oh my God, did this just happen? And mind you, the boss will come out, see this person doing this, and will just pretend like nothing happened. Like, I just didn't see my assistant sitting there TikToking, like right in front of me. You know what I mean? And this is like offices where you go to big offices. To
like state offices.
State offices, banks, any other government related or private businesses. This is what you're going to find. Very seldom do you go in and you see that it's that is not happening. I went into an office recently, and I'm not going to name names because you would know. But I went into an office recently, and this person's office, this is like the head of the head. The assistant was there with the security, and they were watching TikTok videos.
Oh, wow.
TikTok videos. Their boss is next door. The boss walks in, okay, and sees them and didn't say anything. And I was just like, oh, good. He's going to see this. Sees them, does not say anything. It's just like, oh, that, you know, like, oh, if you do that, like, that's nothing. So, again, that type of mindset, because you're coming in where, you know, everything is professional. If you're told to be 9, you're there at 8:30 waiting to collect the paperwork, you put it here. The runaround to set up the business, from getting a TIN number to an ID to that, if you're there, let's say you're expecting 3 days, might as well extend it to a month. If you're lucky to get the paperwork going, because they'll bounce you office upon office. And mind you, some people work till 3, some to 2, then get them this, like they went to pray. Then sometimes if it's Friday, they've gone for the day. Kele amna ditch, there's ginte. So all kinds of mess in between that. So that's the first, like professionalism. That's going to be a very difficult of a shock at first. So that's the setting up a business. So let's say you're not even setting up a business. Now, let's say you just want to go home because you know what? You've been abroad, like Anna said, for a very long time. And I just want to go raise my kids somewhere nice. I've been with my husband. We've been together. We've hustled for years, for 20-something years. We're going to move back. And, you know, this going back home and culture, I want to make sure my kids have the religion and the culture. And it's just nice. Then I'm a kid. We just want to go back home. You pack up, you go. So I give you an example where a man packs up, goes, ends up going first, or even, I mean, you hear so many stories, right? They end up going first to just set up, make sure the house and everything is good. By the time you get there, life has changed because you know what? You've seen where your friends is like, bul nanguli, yo, you're allowing this and da 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 da. And you hear it all the time. You see it where your man was a certain way at home with you, where both of you are cooking and cleaning and taking care of the kids and vacuuming and doing whatever. that you do the house chores together. You work, they work, you guys earn, you live happy. Then you pack up and go home. The first thing is going to tell you that, oh, by the way, you know, I can't do these things anymore because now I'm in Gambia, you know, I can't do that. But in your family, I'm not, you know, this alpha male, whatever. So you just have to, you know, make sure you prepare my meals like the king that I am. Okay, fine, whatever. So you start getting into that. So the changes happen. Then you go hang out with friends. Next thing you know, you get into the system. And the system is most married men, and it's not hidden, most married men in the Gambia, they cheat. They got side chicks, they got side pieces, and all kinds of messes that's happening in the country. Women throw themselves at you, men vice versa. So it's just there. It's a big old orgy. So you have that also as an expectation where you going in to go and set up your family unit. And then now it's like either you have the second wife coming in or possible second wife or side chick. So are we even ready to handle that? So that's the question I'm going to bounce to you now, Dr. Nafi. Do you think we're ready to handle that possible cheating second wife, all of that?
Girl, I'm sitting here asking, well, lucky for them. And I mean, and I say this to my husband, like, most men may do that and they may get away with it. Unlucky for you, talking to my husband, you can be killed in your sleep and nobody's going to ask questions. You know what I mean? So I said, it ain't going to be you, boo. You stay away from that because you're married to a doctor, okay? So let's just act right and not have to, you know, rip the repercussion of that. But, you know, that's just joking. Obviously, I say that I'm not going to kill my husband for cheating, but... You know, but sometimes, I mean, to be honest, most women are that devastated, right? No. Think about it. You're with your husband for over 20 years. You guys decide to go back to Gambia, you know, looking for a slower paced life, you know, good quality life with each other. And your world turns upside down because when you go, you find out that the way that there's an undertone when you go to Gambia, and this, it's different for women and men. You could live abroad together, support each other, raise your kids together. The husband is putting the kids to bed, bathing the kids, sometimes making snacks for the kids even, right? When you're at work. Mm-hmm. And that's all okay. But once we go back to Gambia, it's like you enter the threshold, the boundaries of Gambia, and the mindsets change. People become reacclimated to like stupidity, okay? And so... And so it's like, you know, you're supposed to not respect your wife. You're supposed to act like you're the alpha man. And that's okay. You don't have to ask your wife when you make decisions because that's the alpha way to do things. I don't understand. This is all part of disrespecting your spouse. And in our culture, that is ingrained there. It is okay because I see a whole lot of men growing up. They did not have to ask their wives or talk to their wives about decisions they made. Huge decisions, life-changing decisions. And they just make it on their own and their wives would just fall in line with whatever decisions they made. And as a woman, you cannot go complain anywhere because people will tell you, well, your man is supposed to make the decisions. They don't have to tell you. So growing up in that climate, so when you go back, you almost get, you know, reacclimated to that way of thinking. When you were outside of that, you were functioning just fine, taking care of your kids, helping your wife, you know, as a team. But once you come back to Gambia, it's as if there's this pressure, societal pressure, where if you treat your wife right, you're a punk, you're a pussy, you're like a nobody. This is, let's be honest, if you treat your wife with respect in Gambia, most people say dankoraga.
Mm-hmm. You're scared of her. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Instead of emulating that, saying, "Yeah, I want to do the same thing that my brother's doing. He respects his wife. He talks to his wife about things. He's taking care of the kids when the wife is cooking. Man, I want to be like that." Instead of doing that, we ridicule him. We make fun of him. We make jokes like, "Ha, are you now the woman of the house? Did I just see you fixing dinner or lunch for your baby? Did I just see you changing your baby's diaper? Yeah. Don't you have a wife? We need to like literally move away from that kind of mentality to think that the husband does not participate at home other than financially. That's, we have to move away from that mindset because we now have to realize not only is the man financially contributing, so is the woman.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So we're both financially contributing. So we both also need to contribute in other ways. Like if I'm cooking, you watch the baby, you know? Or if I'm watching the baby, then you help make the bottle for the baby. So I feel like when people go back home, you know, we all want to go back. We're all, like I said, romanticizing about going back home. But when you get there, I have seen so many couples in a matter of 2-3 years of going back home.
6 months, honey.
Their marriage is done.
It's done. 6 months.
They're no longer married because they go to, like, going back home is a completely different beast.
Yeah.
You go there, like I said, it's like a reverse culture shock. You know, where it depends on what side of the coin you're on. Are you going to rapidly acclimate yourself back to the way things used to be? And people will tell you, hey, you know, like, if you're American, you neckwood feed it. Basically, they're telling you, you better get in line with how things are done here or else. Meaning, we don't want to change our mentality. We don't want to change to the better. We like staying the way we are. We like being acting like 300 years ago, where we do things without really, you know, not being very supportive to the whole family as a unit. And I think living in the West for a while, when you go back to Gambia, sometimes it's tough, especially for the women folk, to want to get back to feeling unseen, feeling disrespected, feeling like that, you know, like your voice doesn't matter, like you don't count. It's hard for a lot of us who have lived in the West, know our worth, to go back to Gambia and be told we're worthless.
Yeah.
And I think that's where there's, you know, that's where, you know, when most people go back, the women are the ones who say, well, I'm not going to stand for this. And they get a divorce.
Yeah.
Because most of the men are okay just falling back in line with how things used to be because it's to their advantage.
Right.
You know, I mean, what do you guys think about that? Anna, what do you think?
I mean, listen, you're preaching to the choir. I myself know so many couples that have gone back to Gambia and they either have left together, the ones that are lucky because they realize that this is not working for the unit,
right,
or most of them have ended up where the woman is heading back to wherever they moved there from with their children because the husband has now found a new wife, found a new side chick, found a new woman. And with all her efforts, she's unable to keep him home. You know, he's out there. And I remember when I went to Gambia and we would go on date nights because we did date nights in the U.S. We ran into a friend of mine that was like, what are you guys doing here? I was like, oh, we're on date night. And they started laughing. Like someone who had lived abroad in the U.S.
Wow.
And I know for a fact that he was going on date nights with his wife as well when they were in the U.S. But now that they've moved to Gambia, he's laughing at me and my husband for going on date nights, continuing that tradition in our couple, because clearly he no longer does that because he's back home. And there's this clear separation of men doing things with men and women doing things with women in Gambia. Like, we like to segregate between the sexes. So a lot of men hang out together a lot, and then women are expected to also, like, hang out together and do their things. And while they're doing those hangouts is where they get up to all kinds of mischief. And I just feel like going home is always disadvantageous to the woman. Because of our Gambian cultural and traditional norms have empowered the man to do as you please, and the woman is supposed to sit and endure. Because when you go and complain to your aunties, they'll tell you, hey, money, me, my husband, you do you know what your father did to me? Then they start telling you the worst things that they've been through, and it becomes this like competition of struggle. And the new generation of women, we're not interested in that. I don't care if my dad left you here and when I married 2-3 wives on top of you, that's and you sat and take it. I'm not doing it. So I just feel like there's that for the family unit. And it sounds like we're harping a lot on just the family unit aspect of moving home. But tell me what is more important than your family that you've built. Your jobs, you can always get a job. Right. Businesses, you can always start businesses. Money, you will always make money. Mm-hmm. There is endless amounts of money in this world. So there's no finishing of money. But then it's the space. When I left, what I was clear about was that I will not be retiring and returning home to Gambia. I was very clear. After 2-3 years of living there, I was like, this just doesn't work for us. So my husband being Rwandese and me Tanzanian to Tanzania, it's a developed, has lots of opportunities. Tanzania has people with open mind. Tanzania, the culture is not as close as it is in Gambia because it's a much bigger country with so many different tribes, so many different, the international community is huge. So we're like, that's where we see ourselves if we're ever going to go back home. But I wanted to share this quote that has been making its rounds on social media. It's been said that it was the Russian president, Vladimir Putin, that quoted this, but of course they fact checked it and they can't confirm that it was him. But I want y'all to just hear me out and then just sit with yourself and see if you agree with what the quote is saying and if it's true. It goes, when an African entrepreneur becomes rich, he will send his money and go to Switzerland. He's going to France for medical treatment. He will invest in Germany. He's buying his homes in Dubai. He consumes Chinese products. He's praying in Rome or Mecca. Their children are studying in Europe or Canada, and they will take Western nationalities. They travel to Canada, the US, and all over Europe for tourism. If he dies, he will be buried in his home country that he did not care about. Mm. Africa is nothing but a cemetery for Africans.
That's deep, yo. That is deep, deep.
But is there some truth to
that? There's some truth to it. I would say there's definitely some truth to it. Yeah.
It's not a completely, you know, false statement. Mm-mm. That I'm listening to it while you were saying it. And most of what you are saying is true. Because just thinking about it from a medical point of view, I go to Gambia for these medical trips, volunteering. And I cannot, for the love of me, understand why we don't have things like Tylenol, paracetamol, like basics, sutures. There are places in the Gambia where when women give birth, you have to go buy your own sutures and come back so they can suture you up.
Yes.
Meanwhile,
that's the reality.
Meanwhile, people in like the government are just easily breezing on to another country to get medical care or medical treatments for themselves and their family members. I mean, are you kidding me? You know, when COVID happened, when people couldn't fly, right?
Mm-hmm.
At that moment, some people were panicking in Gambia because now comes the reality that, you know, where maybe from the president all the way to his cabinet members, ministers, everybody have come to the dark realization that, oh, snap, we have to go to our own hospitals.
Mm-hmm.
The hospitals that we have neglected to do our due diligence on, fix it, make it better. We now have to go to those, quote unquote, pretty much it's a cemetery. You go there to die. So I'm saying all this to say that there is truth to what this statement is saying. It doesn't matter who said it. It doesn't matter who it came from. But the fact that when somebody dies, we all want to go back home. Right?
To this one. Yeah.
Go ahead, Anna. Awa.
No, I was going to say, I think that there's some truth to it, because in essence, it's just pretty much saying that when the African person, so let's just take maybe a person from the government right now, right? They came from, you know, very humble beginnings, right? Finally, they got educated, maybe all locally. Then they got the seat, right? So they're like, oh, I'm going to make sure I provide my kids what I didn't have. So university comes when there's scholarship opportunities, because we see it. This is what's happening now. Scholarship opportunities, they're not even brought out to the public, because you know what? They're taking it and giving it to their kids. So let's say a scholarship opportunity comes in, you get the opportunity to go to Canada. So your two children, they've left and gone to Canada. They get educated, you know, God's blessed them, maybe with other opportunities or whatever. You end up going to visit. Now you go back and forth from Canada for your medical visits and all that, right? And maybe the opportunity comes again where those your kids are, you know, working for a, you know, good, steady, whatever income that they're getting, you also leave. And it's true, and you hear it. And so it's unfortunately, let's say you get ill, you pass away, we have to send the body home. And that's it. It's just a cemetery. So majority of folks that are passing away in the U.S. or in Europe, whatever, and they're like, then your body be home. I mean, you're not even connected there anymore. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, you're right. So there's definitely some truth to it, because every time you hear it, this person's been, you know, in the U.S. for so long, they pass away, and your body be home. I always wonder why, because your kids are not even there. Who's going to take care of the cemetery? Nobody. Nope. And we have this another culture that might as well be an episode of its own, where people get buried in the Gambia and they forget, like, they've literally dumped their family somewhere in the cemetery. They're not labeled. They not even have a stick on it. Nothing. You've forgotten. Mm-hmm. There might be another time where somebody mugasfeka, oh, there was a person there. Okay, well, that's it. Every time I go into that cemetery to go and quote unquote visit my dad, my heart breaks. My heart breaks for how we just, I understand there's nothing there. Okay, I get it. The soul is gone. But still, we have to have that type of, I don't know, I feel more of a nurturing and caring and empathetic, you know, mindset of just knowing that every now and then it's good to go and pray for them, or just go visit and clean where they've been buried, at least respect it. Mm-hmm. But no, it's just not. So again, so you've gone through all of that to be buried back home where you kind of just like, yeah, it's just not, and life moves on. So It's all part of this conversation of, you know, when you go back home, what is it that you're willing to do? What are you willing to accept? What are you willing to open up to? And it's not as easy as, okay, when you go, everything is going to be red carpeted. I think I don't also want to discourage people from going home, because if it's not us, then who? It is home. I remember leaving, you know, mid-90s, and my dad saying, never forget, this is your home. You have to come back. Mm-hmm. You have to come and, you know, help build. You have to come back. If we all go and decide to stay, nothing will be rebuilt. And some of it, I hate to say it, it's our fault. Mm-hmm. The Gambia is the way it is. Some of it, we also have to take responsibility, because we left it. And so who's taking it right now? Mostly uneducated and whatever. Because we all, once we get to a certain level, we don't want to come back either, because we know the challenges. It's a very difficult place. It takes a lot of sacrifice to leave everything and come back. A lot of sacrifice, because especially for women, you know that there's a possibility your man's going to cheat and all of that. So I think it's also, you know, we got to blame the guy somehow. But there's also so much.
Also, Mary, I think the generation you're speaking about, our parents who actually came back, I think the environment was ripe for it. They They gave them the scholarships to go and get educated abroad with the intention of them coming back home. And they had space for them because they carved out the space for the educated Gambians that went abroad to come back and build systems and build, you know, policies and actually help the country move forward. Then what you find with our generation is even when we go back, we've been educated, we go back with our degrees, we stay in government, especially those who want to stay in government. You stay in government and you easily get poached by any of the international organizations that come because you stick out as the Western educated person who gets it, right? But then now you have everybody else fighting you. And we cannot talk about this topic of going back home, especially for us Gambians, without talking about the spiritual and demonic and juju part of our culture and our religion. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of people go back home and they're scared of the people that are in the spaces that they're in who are practicing devil worship, who are practicing juju, who are practicing black magic, who are going to go out of their way to make sure that they hurt you because they're threatened by your presence. They're threatened by your knowledge. They're threatened by your potential. So what you find a lot of people, they'll be like, hey, I don't want anything to happen to me because we have heard of women who something happens to them, men who something, and it's always these mysterious things that there's no explanation for, but we all know that this was some black magic. This was some voodoo things that have taken place. And they will even tell you when the Western people come. I remember at the U.S. Embassy Banjul, they were like, when the ambassadors come and the vice ambassadors, they'll be like, you better be nice to the staff, because if you're not, you won't know why, but your term will be cut short.
What?
Oh, yes. Sweetie pie. Like, don't play with them. They will do what they need to do. Like, if you're giving them so much of a hard time. Oh, yes. Whether you're at the head or whether you're head of poly-econ department or you're head of policy, you're head of HR, these Western, for lack of a better word, these white people, right? When they come and they want to misbehave and they want to treat these Gambians like they're nothing or they're not being respectful or they're demeaning them, they will get together and do some black magic thing. And next thing you know, someone who was supposed to be there for 3 years is now leaving in less than 6 months, 9 months, a year and a half. So that is also part of why a lot of the Gambian diaspora, when they come home, they assess the environment. Mm-hmm. They see what corporate Gambia looks like. They see that it can be dangerous to them. And they're like, man, let me apply for a job with the UN. How many smart young Gambians do I know that came and they're now at the World Bank in DC? They're with the IMF. They're in Saudi Arabia. They're in Tunis. They're in what's it called? Geneva. They quickly leave because they see that this space is not safe for me. And I feel like that also is a reality for us Gambians. Yes. Now, I have to say that from the Tanzanian side, it's a completely different environment. Tanzanians want their educated young youth to come back home. And when they come back home, they make space for them. They utilize them. They help them with getting jobs. They help them with getting loans at the bank so that they can build their homes. They help them with getting loans so they can purchase cars and build their families. So I feel like when the environment is allowing you to grow, Africans will go back home. But in the case of Gambia, we say a lot about Gambians, but we are the Gambians. It's us. It's our limited thinking mindset that keeps us behind. And our Mary, what you said is also fair. We have left the government to the rural Gambian who is not as educated, who is not as exposed, who is not as open. And what do we know that they know for sure is how to do their black magic and how to think from that space. So when you go into those environments and it's mostly people who are coming from the rural area and now you're seen as a threat, you better check yourself.
Well, I mean, well, listen, just think about right now. Let me just do this quick point. Sorry. But think about like right now what's happening, this FGM law, right? Let's just take that. All these majority of people, the National Assembly members, they are uneducated or never left the country, not exposed whatsoever. So But who wants to be a National Assembly member? Majority of us don't, because you know, it's just one of those things like Lolo do real, quote unquote, they call it not even real government because you're not a minister. You're just there to make policy. But those are the policies. Why are we suffering? Why is it like with everything that's happening in the country, all the issues that we have, you choosing to just talk about a female genital parts, and that's what you want to focus on like right now? Because majority of the people that are making these policies don't know much. That's why you can sit there and start quoting things that don't, they're not even relevant. Why, if you ask me, I mean, I'm just going to be honest. If you ask me, if I was living in the U.S. and say, oh, Mary, can you come home and be a National Assembly member? I'm like, hell no, why would I do that? Why would I want to do that? And what is it for? How am I going to, you know what I'm saying? So that's the mentality where majority of us, how would I get paid? Especially if you're making six-figure incomes in the U.S. and the comeback. Exactly. It takes a lot of sacrifice to be like, okay, so, and then to do what? They'll figure out their own policy. And then when we suffer, we all be like, ah, Yun Gambia, Lee, Yun Gambia. But none of us want to come and be National Assembly members to go and be voted on and be a part of a political party and all that. We don't.
Mm-hmm.
That's another issue.
So then my question then becomes, if we are not willing to go back and sacrifice and be a National Assembly member, do we have room to speak?
You take some dirty one.
Do we? I mean, that's the honest truth. Do we have room to criticize if we're not willing to sacrifice and go sit there and do what they're doing?
I think we do.
We need to also like make sure that if we are criticizing, we're willing to do what the people there are doing. And yeah, but not all of us are willing to do that.
But Nafi, I think in this case with the three of us, mm-hmm. all three of us have gone back to Gambia and we're still in Gambia working and trying. Right. So I feel like for people whose hands are in the pot, we have a right to critically look at it and make an analysis of our personal experiences. It's different if you haven't been to Gambia for 20 years and you're like, Banjo Daranekufa. Yes. Sir, please reserve your comments for somebody who cares.
I agree with that one.
That's what I'm saying.
But Facebook gangsters.
Nothing. Yeah. We talk about it all the time. How many times, every time you go on your medical retreat, you leave and you're like, I'm never going back. Oh my God. Because you are completely exhausted, the challenges you had to face. But guess what? 6 months later, Nafi's calling me and our mayor talking about, I'm going on my medical trip. We're like, chemo.
I know.
I'm a glutton for punishment.
I remember our Mary at the book launch. You were like, I was like, you look tired. You're like, I'm exhausted. You were planning your woman boss 5-year anniversary event. And you were like, the next day, I'm jumping on a plane and going back to Spain. But guess what? Omer is going to go back to the Gambia in the next 2-3 months because the work is still there. So I feel like, you know, our hands are still in it. We're trying to improve in the ways that we can, but we're being honest by talking about the challenges that are on the ground that so much of the time we just want to hide away from, or we say it in secret, but we can't have open discourse about it.
Yeah. No, I totally agree with you. I feel like this has to be a joint effort. But in saying that, I also want us to not. I've heard one of you made a comment about people who have never left the Gambia, right? And so then, you know, like most of the people in the what do you call them, the MPs, right? Uh-huh. Most of them have never left the Gambia, therefore they're not that educated.
I didn't say that.
Well, no, we're saying that education.
But I said most of them are not educated anyway. Right. But they're also, left the country and they're not exposed.
Right. But we also want, not leaving the Gambia does not equate on education either. Right?
I agree.
So there's a lot of Gambians who are born and raised in Gambia. They've never left, but they're still educated. Even in the remote villages, I got to stand up for the rural folks, my rural folks. I got to stand up for them, because what we don't want to do, though, is on our podcast is feel like we're insulting people from different parts of the country. That's not our intention. And so just because somebody's from the rural area does not, again, make them number one, uneducated. Or I think now you can have the most Western educated Gambian who is still as ignorant as shit, if we're going to be honest.
About, we see cultural, it all the time.
About cultural stuff. So we should not equate Western education as the only type of education, because some of them from here, like Gambian people, go back home. And when it comes to women's rights, women's topics, women's health, they're still so ignorant about that kind of stuff. So it's not only people that are not Western educated that are not, you know, that we should equate just education in general. You know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, I completely agree. I never said that. I just want to be clear too. I never said that. I said majority of those National Assembly members are not educated. They are not educated, as in not high school or even college.
In Gambia.
That's the difference. In Gambia. In the Gambia.
But that's what I'm saying. But sometimes, then this is just my, I'm just being the devil's advocate here, right? Mm-hmm. Because when I talk to a lot of my friends here, we get into this whole debate about what constitutes as education.
You know what I'm saying.
We're talking about formal education.
I wanted to get you to say that, right? You're talking about formal education.
But you know, exactly. Majority of folks in the United States or anywhere else in the country around the world, majority of people that are making policies, they're the ones that are educated, got some sort of formal education.
Right.
Exactly. And when I say if you did not even get that, you have no other exposure, mm-hmm. but there's no other candidate that's standing up.
Right.
There's no other.
That's the thing. We don't have like this. It's pretty much, you know, like what are we getting? Chicken scrap. If we're going to be honest.
Well, yeah, there we go.
And I hear where you're coming from, our Mary, because when you're for a policy to be established and carried out by any government, it typically goes through several stages. So from inception to conclusion, you will have agenda building, you have formulation, you have adoption, you have implementation, you have evaluation, termination. What our Mary, the point I think our Mary is trying to make is just ask one of the MPs, what is agenda building? And already it's like they're hit with like a deer hit with a headlight. Yes. So, and the point is the formal education doesn't have to come from the Western world. The formal education can come from home.
Exactly.
It can be homegrown. Exactly. But we have to have a criteria to become an MP. Like what, how do you just.
That's the point. There has to be criteria. You hit it right on the head. That's what it is. We don't have criteria. People can roll out of bed and they're an MP.
I mean, that's what it is, you know, and then so majority are men.
Criteria.
And then majority are men. So when you go up country, you know, we've met because we did a tour up country to try to see if we can get women to sit as National Assembly members to make policies.
Mm-hmm.
When you go touring across the country, majority, again, are men. Second, the women that are interested in politics or are sitting as a National Assembly member or councilors or whatever, or ward members, you know, because there's tiers into it.
Mm-hmm.
The most education I've come across is 12th grade. The most is 12th grade. And that's okay. But you also got to know there's got to be some other informal. I don't know. You got to prep them. And I'm not saying this in some sort of way because my team, my staff, majority of them, never left the Gambia, and they're super smart. They will stand with any against anybody,
absolutely,
like you know, from another. So that's not the. It's just again, if you're sitting in that high office, at least bring something in. I mean, for me, National Assembly members, people that are making policies, they are more important in those roles than the ministerial positions.
Yeah,
because those are just appearances.
Yeah,
the other ones, you need to know what you're doing.
Criteria. Yes. That's it. No, I get it. I get. Mm-hmm. Listen, I one of us has to play the devil's advocate. Otherwise, this is going to be a boring. All three of us got the same ideas.
No, I hear you. Nothing, you know what I mean? I hear you, but I think the qualifications have to matter for us to be able to have informed and knowledgeable people sitting in those seats making policies that affect an entire country. Come on, you people. We have to have qualifications. Like, is it 12th grade high school you have to graduate? Do you then have to have education in law? Should you be legally well-versed? Should you have, you know, civic education and make sure that you understand where we come from as a country, like starting from our founding fathers. How did we get to where we are? These are things that it has to be information that our MPs have so that they're moving the country forward and the needle is going up. Otherwise, Nafi, we'll continue. What we're dealing with is, like our Mary said, with the FGM. We move 10 steps back, then we run and sprint 50,000 steps backwards.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're trying to repeal something that is very unhealthy for women in the country.
Absolutely.
Men are saying it's unhealthy. Women are saying it's unhealthy. But then there are a few people who have a big microphone and they're loud and they're boisterous. And because they hold the position of religious leaders and supporters, now we're all scared to question them. So
that dude just wants to be president. That's all that he's doing. And he's like, people don't even know what he's doing. That dude just trying to be president.
Well, I mean, we're saying all this to say, okay, so we only got a few more minutes. We got to wrap up. But so my question to you guys would be, what are some of the ways that people can successfully settle back or resettle back in Gambia if they're thinking about going back home? What would be some of the tips that we can give to people? Well, I know what the number one is. Don't let your husband go without you.
Girl, because when he goes with you, he's still not going to marry a second wife and have side chicks.
It just depends on that person, I think, one. But there's ways that people are successfully relocated and where, like I said, keep that sanity going. And yeah. I think I mentioned that on the first time, like, make sure you have your bread and butter coming from outside.
Mm-hmm.
That way you can maintain that sanity. You can maintain a good, a lifestyle where you've kind of kept it together. Mm-hmm. So if you're earning in dollars, at least you have some sort of a little bit above, so you're not making six-figure income coming back to the Gambia, making, $15,000 a month and trying to survive. You're going to be frustrated and you're going to pack up and go. Mm-hmm. So make sure if you can do some sort of work from home or consultancy or whatever, get that going, get you a good home, lower the standard of living. So, instead of eating out every day, maybe you can, get your cooked meals or whatever, but at least keep that going out with your wife or your spouse, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it's once a month that you do date nights or once a week or twice a month or whatever, you do that. Make sure that the kids have a proper education because, unfortunately, our public school system is just not what it used to be. I was public school educated, but, we all know that's not the same thing anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can afford the private school, then do that. There's absolutely great schools right now. Keep your business to yourself and keep it with your family. Keep your unit tight. Don't allow anybody, or yeah, I don't go to flee, or yeah, I don't go board dorm, whatever. Yeah, allow that. At the gala last week with my husband, his speech actually was, because it was International Women's Day. So it's like, okay, normally, he would think about what to really talk about, but he was just thinking, and he dedicated really the conversation to me and his daughters. And he was just talking to, at the end, was like, I'm talking to all you Gambian men. Literally, and when he said that, everybody was laughing, but it's the truth. He said, stick to the one you know. Love the imperfections and just stop going out. Like, you can't finish all these women. There's so many around the world. You can't finish all of them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so true. When you go with that mindset of, I love my wife and I love my children and I love my unit, I love my family. Work on that and focus on that. You can't go if friends are coming in just because that's what they do. Let them do that. Mm-hmm. Let them go and hoe around. Focus on what you got to do and have a good life, because you can have a really nice life in the Gambia. You can, have the family, your extended family. You can go to the beach. You can have, fresh food and fresh meats and vegetables and fruit and so on. And there's a good culture that at least you can still instill, and religion and so on. There's good things about it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you shouldn't shy away from it, but you have to go with a very strong mindset and mentality to know that I'm not going to allow certain things to come into that box.
An unbreakable unit.
Right. And yes. Think, try to hang out with people with similar mindsets. Because if you go back to Gambia and you start hanging around a group of guys who all have three wives, chances are you are going to end up having three wives, right? So you want to stick with people that are like minds, like yourself, right? Like if you're trying to keep your family unit, have a certain mentality, then, you know, just to avoid a lot of the social pressures, societal pressures, because it will be there when you go back home. People are going to nitpick your ways of life, how you and your wife used to do things in America. People will nitpick it if you come back home. So just be ready and try to be a united front, right? Support each other, have each other's backs. Once you break that unity and you're now just hanging out with men in Gambia, and they then try to influence you to think differently, to act differently. And that's where the breakdown happens. But I want to say just quickly also, if you are somebody a little bit older and you're trying to go back home, or somebody with a medical condition, just keep in mind that the medical facilities, the medical care back home is not as good as maybe where you currently live. So having to have medications you need, if somebody has a heart condition, somebody has a certain chronic condition that needs extensive care, or you have, renal failure or kidney failure where you need dialysis, those types of conditions, be mindful. It is not advisable to go back and reestablish back in Gambia, because they don't have effective dialysis machines for you to use. People then come to find out that if you have some of those chronic conditions and you end up going back home, you do not live long. Most of those people end up dying at a shorter time because the facility, they don't have the required or necessary facilities to help keep getting the type of care, medical care that they need. So people should also keep that in mind if they're planning on going back home, or if your parents are wanting to now go back home to live there. You know, just make sure that you are aware of what the medical field looks like there. And if you're going to send your parents back home, or even if you are going to go back home and you have certain types of chronic conditions that needs to be managed, just, you know, be just FYI, because I see it there. And it's just most people don't end up making it because they don't have the necessary care that they have once they go back home.
Yeah, that was going to be one of my, so here's my list. My list is, you have to be real with the fact that there's limited access to quality healthcare in Gambia. Mm-hmm. So my advice to you is keep your healthcare system in whatever country you're in still active. So if you're coming from Europe, if you're coming from America, do not sever all your healthcare insurance plans, throw it in the trash because you're saying you're going home. Keep that active so that if anything happens, and this is for Gambia, they can't help you. You can jump on a plane and get back here and your insurance is still active. Education is also an area where it's a struggle for Gambia. So initially it's going to seem like the school fees is cheap even for private schools. However, make sure you've put on enough money aside to be able to put your children in the best private schools, and you're able to afford it because you're coming from the Western world where school is probably free. So factor that into your moving costs. Again, we have political instability and conflict in Africa. So make sure that you have a plan for returning here. I know it's going to sound wrong, but Suhela Nedenga, you can pack up your things and you have a place to come back to. So I don't know. Don't sell your house. Maybe rent it. Okay. If you're renting, I know in these European countries, the government gives you apartments and whatnot, and you can sublease it. Just make sure you're hanging on to whatever form of housing you have in your Western country when you decide you're going to move back home. Lack of job opportunities and high unemployment rates is something we deal with in Gambia. Don't go to Gambia just looking to get a job. You're not going to find the same salary match from the job that you're leaving here in the US, especially for those of us that are in our 30s and 40s. We're in a high income earning years. Most of us are touching over six figures. So that huge salary cut, you are going to feel it. So make sure that you have some kind of side situation, some side gig. And like our Mary said, make sure you're getting your dollars. Take one of the computers with you and keep a contract. Do some kind of job where you're getting money not just from Gambia, but from wherever you're coming from. Mm-hmm. Also, there's limited access to basic amenities. And mm-hmm. I'm gonna focus on this. Electricity. Make sure that you do your research. Get a generator. Make sure that you also get an inverter, so that if the gas is not available for the generator, you have the inverter. If the inverter is not there, get solar panels. Make sure you have the backup to the backup to the backup. If you want to maintain mm-hmm. your same standard of life, is it expensive? Yes. So save up for it. Clean water. Make sure you have a borehole. Make sure that in your compound, you have a borehole. It sounds like, man, this is a lot, but you're going to need it because water mm-hmm. in the evenings, there's no high pressure when you turn on the shower. Now you're showering with drip, drip, drips of water mm-hmm. because it's after 5 o'clock, you know, night be watching a leggy pressure be them. So you got to cater for things like that.
Mm-hmm. Legit. It's true.
The truth, though.
And that's my list.
That's and then amazing.
Wishing you all the best of luck.
I think let me just add to this real quickly, because obviously if you are, and I think I've mentioned this probably in the past, but if you are really serious about coming home, in mm-hmm. addition to everything that they said, mm-hmm. consider purchasing a home. Now mm-hmm. they sell these apartments in communities mm-hmm. where at least you're going to have electricity 24 mm-hmm. hours. You're going to have water that won't run out for the most part, unless there's like, you know, a pipe bust or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's happened where I lived. Mm-hmm. You know, things like that. So maybe save up, purchase one of those apartments mm-hmm. just so you can have your peace of mind. You have security. Mm-hmm. You have electricity. Again, you know, the basic needs where you used to electricity and water. At mm-hmm. least you have that. You're not looking for a massive home, you know, to have a mansion if you just want to get something small to start mm-hmm. with. And figure it out until you build what you really want. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's not a bad idea to also consider that, because that's a good way to kind of ease into the, and I want to call this, because I've been listening to all the art of moving home, not only mm-hmm. the myth, but this like the art of moving back home, mm-hmm. Gradually easing into the space of it. Get a car. You know, make sure your car works, make sure like, you know, you go through a checkbox and mm-hmm. get everything. That way you can be like, oh, feel like okay, it's going to be easy. No, especially if you're going home with kids, just, mm-hmm. you know, get that going. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's important for people who are thinking about moving back home to go a couple times, get a feel for it.
Yes, I was just going to say that.
Just please. Get a feel for it. Don't just jump
with the kids as well.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
So, absolutely. Yeah, get a feel for it. Go back first yep. and see, so that you can know what the deficits are. What are things you're going to need to prepare yourself for, right? And, yeah, and I guess that's all we got, because we could talk all about right. this forever, right?
Cool beans.
All right, guys. Till next time.
Bye.